This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Hi, you're listening to Green Pulse, and I'm David Fogarty, the co-host for this channel, along with Nirmal Ghosh. Now, who hasn't escaped a scorchingly hot day by seeking refuge in a nicely chilled shopping centre? Or for those in cold climates, seeking refuge in a toasty warm office or cafe? Have you ever wondered how much energy it takes to cool, heat and power the buildings in our cities and towns? It's a lot. In fact, the building sector is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. And humanity will never reach net zero emissions by the middle of the century unless we can make buildings truly green. So how is the building sector responding to the climate challenge? How are building owners and managers cutting emissions, and what more can they do? To learn more about this, we speak to David Fogarty, who is head of ESG Consulting and Sustainability Services at global real estate agency CBRE. David is based here in Singapore. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, David. Thank you. Great to be finally doing this and spending this time in the studio with you. We talked about this for quite a while. The fact that, you know, we've got two Australians around the same age with the same heritage, both in Singapore and both passionate about the environment. So it's couldn't be happier to be here, and I couldn't be happier to be mistaken by yourself sometimes as well, which is great. And just congratulate you on the great work you do in climate reporting.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's great to meet somebody who has the same name as me and is another green expert. So, okay, so let's get started. Perhaps you could set the scene for us by explaining just how large the emissions are from heating, cooling and powering buildings globally. Is it larger than emissions, say, from industry like manufacturing or transport? And how fast is the building sector growing every year?
Yeah, look, indeed, it's very significant, David. The building industry accounts for nearly 39% of global energy-related carbon dioxide emissions. That includes emissions from the construction, operation and demolition of buildings. So roughly 11% is embedded carbon. We can talk about that in a minute. But if we're to meet the 1.5 degree temperature increase by 2050, you know, that's the minimum we want to achieve. We need to cut emissions by 45% by 2030, which is not that far away. It's 6 years away, six budget cycles. So we've got a lot to do in a short period of time. It's a significant issue, and the building industry really at the forefront of it.
Great. Yes. And so what can be done to cut the operational emissions of buildings? And operational, I guess you can explain that to us, as is the related to electricity use mainly, I guess. And what are the key steps that are being taken now by the industry?
Yeah, that's a good question. Look, there's several steps that we're seeing our clients taking in the industry, from adopting energy efficiency measures like upgrading insulation, optimizing heating, ventilation, you know, upgrading the air conditioning systems, using energy efficient lighting, looking at installing smart building automation systems to, you know, help with the energy use. Obviously, looking at renewable energy integration, such as solar panels, which is obviously a big focus here in Singapore. In new buildings or retrofits, you're looking at using more sustainable materials and adopting environmental friendly construction practices that can significantly reduce the carbon footprint of buildings. So recycled materials, employing efficient construction techniques and minimizing waste during the construction process all helps.
Okay, well, that's actually quite a lot. So that's good to see that that's actually being done. Now, you are a sustainability professional for a major property management and investment company, CBRE. So in the conversations you're having with clients, what are you seeing? Are they increasingly focused on renting space in greener buildings? And are building owners themselves, are they also focused on investing in cutting emissions?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there's a growing focus among occupier clients that we have on renting space in greener, healthier and smarter buildings. I think it's a real focus we're seeing. Many tenants or occupiers have got their own green commitments, you know, that they need to be aligned with a building that's energy efficient, environmentally friendly, has a reduced carbon footprint. But they're also seeing the other benefits of occupying green buildings, which is lower operating costs, healthier indoor environments for their people. And, you know, again, aligning with their sustainability goals, whether their goals are aligned in a building by 2030 or 2040. We're seeing a huge focus from the occupiers driving that in this market. But also in response to this demand, we're seeing building owners and property managers increasingly focus on cutting and investing in emission reductions as well, because they understand that sustainable buildings are not only attracting environmentally conscientious tenants, but are delivering long-term value and financial benefits as well.
So in addition to energy-related emissions, there are also what are called embedded emissions, which you referred to earlier. And this is the carbon emissions embedded in the materials that are used to construct buildings, such as cement, steel, aluminium, and glass. These are all quite emissions-intensive products to make. So tell us more about this and the challenge in cutting emissions from this area.
Well, it's extremely challenging. These emissions are associated with the production, extraction, and transportation of building materials, as you say, cement, steel, aluminium, and glass. So cutting emissions from the production of these materials is obviously a significant challenge for everybody. It involves obviously addressing the energy intensity use of the production itself, and then also finding alternative low carbon materials or production methods as well. So, you know, exploring alternative materials with lower carbon, finding, you know, different ways of collaboration around the building industry, working with governments, manufacturers, designers, and builders to develop and adopt low carbon technologies. Yeah, promoting sustainable material choice and establishing, you know, more stringent environmental standards. They're all kind of the key things that need to be done. But, you know, cutting emissions is a huge challenge from the built environment. Go back to your earlier question, which I don't think I answered, about the growth of the building industry. We're going to see buildings double, the amount of buildings in the world double by 2060. So we can't build our way out of it. We need to also look at how we're going to retrofit, how we actually go about manufacturing and creating the products that go into buildings as well. So it's an enormous challenge. We don't have all the answers, but we're seeing a lot of investment into technology, into new ways of doing things happening, which I think will, together with government regulation and standards, will make a difference going forward.
Yeah, so I think there are already some examples of what's called green steel, so making steel with hydrogen and electric arc furnaces that are, so you cut out using coal, for example, and making aluminium with renewable energy. And I think also this, you can now get sort of green cement, which is made, not exactly sure of the process, but they can make it using less carbon-intensive processes. So there is hope there. So now, the building sector is facing growing regulatory pressure in Singapore and other places to cut emissions. Could you tell us a bit more about these steps and the challenges of meeting some of these targets? So, I mean, obviously, Singapore wants to retrofit older buildings to cut emissions, and that can be quite costly.
Yeah.
So there has to be some sort of kind of incentive, I guess, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of incentives happening in the Singapore market, and the government and the BCA, Building Construction Authority, have got a lot of programs and financial incentives in place to help people convert into a lower carbon economy. There's building energy efficiency regulations that are being tightened all the time. So we're seeing an increase in the tightening of regulations and reporting on your ESG requirements as well, which is coming to the Singapore market. We've seen the strengthening of the Green Building Certification Scheme, which is the big one in Singapore. And these certifications really encourage building owners to adapt sustainable design, construction, and operational practices. We also obviously see a carbon price and an emission trading scheme as well. So there's a price on carbon, and that'll grow in importance as we go forward. Retrofitting programs, there's a lot of help from government and government-related bodies to help people retrofit buildings. I think these offer, you know, financial incentives, grants, low-interest loans to support the cost of retrofitting, which is quite huge. So that, yeah, is one of the problems we do have of is the cost of retrofitting. You know, retrofitting older buildings to cut emissions is expensive. Upgrading air conditioning systems is not cheap. Putting in new installations, windows, or other components really do require significant upfront investment. And this high cost of retrofitting can be a deterrent for some building owners, especially those with limited financial resources who may prioritize other building improvements as well. And building systems are complex. Older buildings is challenged because, you know, integrating new energy efficiency technology and systems into older infrastructure may require even more significant modifications and can actually disrupt building operations as too. So that has to be balanced as well at the same time. So it's a significant challenge, but I think with governments doing what they can to drive the agenda forward, we're seeing a lot more activity happening in Singapore, which is great, and around APAC.
Now, to give a sense of the scale of that challenge, to get to net zero, the International Energy Agency says the energy intensity of the building sector needs to decline nearly 5 times faster over the next decade than the past decade. So what this means is that energy consumed per square meter must be around 35% less than in 2022. So that really is a huge challenge.
Yeah. massive challenge. And it's going to require a comprehensive and multifaceted approach involving all different types of stakeholders, governments, policymakers, building owners, and professionals, and the wider public as well. You know, we need to strengthen and expand the building energy codes and regulations to set higher standards for energy efficiency. We need to provide greater financial incentives, you know, subsidies and low interest loans to support building owners implementing energy efficiency measures. We need to promote greater research and development to drive innovation, technological innovation in energy efficiency building systems, and also continuing to enhance public awareness and through education campaigns on energy efficient behaviors and the benefits of, you know, reducing carbon. I think the most important thing is collaboration. This can't be solved alone. It involves many people, many different bodies working together to solve probably the most complex challenge the world has faced.
Now, your company, CBRE, has 7 billion square feet under management. So that means the net zero target must be one of the biggest challenges facing your company.
Yeah, absolutely, David. Not just for ourselves, but for our clients. We've got a huge portfolio, 7 billion square feet under management globally. We're in every single country around the world. We work with some of the biggest names, occupiers and building owners globally. And we're committed to help them and to ourselves on our net zero journey. So we're putting a lot of work into simplifying the complexity around sustainability and ESG. We understand the scale of the challenge ahead of us. It's enormous. Our clients have diverse property portfolios encompassing different types of buildings, different locations, different ownership structures. So yeah, to achieve net zero across such a large and varied portfolio requires a real comprehensive and tailored approach to each property within the portfolio.
Now, I want to turn to some of the key trends that you're seeing in your role. For instance, green leasing. So major occupiers imposing sustainability requirements on their landlords.
Yes, they are. Look, green leasing's not a new thing, David. It's been around for quite a while, but it's certainly having a renaissance. We call it green leasing 2.0. So we're seeing, as we mentioned before, a lot of occupiers are in the marketplace are looking for green space to lease. They also now want to know how their building is operating. They want to have access to data. They want to have a landlord who's committed to help them on their net zero journey. And how to do that is, you know, green lease is a great mechanism to be able to mutually agree a set of terms and conditions or side agreement, if you want to call it that. It doesn't have to be a lease. It could be a memorandum of understanding in terms of specifying, you know, data sharing, information sharing, you know, what is the energy, water, and waste of this building? How can I help improve it? How can the owner help me as an occupier improve my environmental footprint? What programs has the owner got in place to help me? And we're seeing the occupiers really driving green leasing in the marketplace. We're seeing that really happening with quite a lot of speed in Singapore and around APAC. So for me, it's quite exciting because it's really putting it on the radar. It's making commitments from both sides, which I think is going to really help move the industry forward. So we've got major occupiers driving landlords. You've got landlords obviously got their own commitments to keep a building certification or a standard in place. To keep that standard, certain things have to happen in the building. So they need to make sure that the tenant is adhering to the conditions of, say, their green mark scheme or their LEED scheme or their WELL certification scheme. We have to have a lot of collaboration. The great thing about green leasing is creates a conversation between investor and occupier about solving the issue we're faced. So the green lease is just a great mechanism for collaboration, and it's great to see it really beginning to take a foothold in this market.
Great. Now, just a final point and a very important one, and that is the growing risk of climate impacts on buildings, such as worsening weather, flood, storms, wildfires, yeah. It could be another. How is industry dealing with these?
Yeah, through lots of different ways. I mean, just upgrading of, you know, building codes and regulations, putting in measures that require stronger, you know, building materials, improved insulation, consideration of climate-related issues in project design. So that's one way. Going back to green building certifications, you know, these certifications provide for buildings to meet specific sustainability criteria, such as, you know, climate-resistant design strategies, energy efficiency systems, water conservation, and use of sustainability materials, and adaption strategies. You know, many building owners are implementing strategies to minimize climate risk through improving resilience, adding flood barriers, or installing renewable energy systems to reduce dependency on fossil fuels. And another way is really through collaboration and knowledge sharing. The industry is really fostering collaboration and knowledge sharing amongst all stakeholders about the effects of climate impact. And that's really helping. It's partnerships between architects, engineers, policymakers, and researchers are really developing some of the really good innovative solutions to address the issue of climate and its effect on the building industry.
So I'm going to throw a final question, a bit of a curveball. What sort of buildings are we going to see in 2050 or 2060?
I'd love to see extremely efficient, net zero, green buildings that are healthy, that create a great environment for people, that create places where people can really thrive in their working environment. We know that health is a big thing. The environment where people work has a big effect on productivity, engagement. I'd like to see buildings that are more connected, so a lot more technology in the buildings, a lot more adaptability. So I looked to the future, and I look to a real positive future. How we get there is the big challenge facing us all today.
Great. So thanks so much for joining us today, David. Well, that wraps it up for Green Pulse. Once again, I'm David Fogarty, and thanks for listening.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.